and now there are 70. Yes, sir, the PGA Tour gets the FedEx Cup playoffs started this week at the FedEx St. Jude Championship in Memphis, Tennessee. And we here at Musings on Golf get set to welcome in Vince Cellini, who has covered his fair share of big events in golf and well beyond. Kelly Elvin here again with the Dean of Production, our executive producer, Jenna Self. Scotty and Rory and the rest have advanced to the first of three tournaments that comprise the FedEx Cup playoffs. Technically, the field at TPC Southwind this week is 69 because Daniel Berger withdrew due to injury. All right, let's just follow the step-by-step then. The top 50 in the points out of Memphis advance to the BMW Championship the following week at Belrive Country Club outside of St. Louis. And then it's the top 30 who go on to the Tour Championship in 2 weeks at East Lake Golf Club in Atlanta. And among the 70 this week is Michael Brennan, who won for the second time on the PGA Tour, a very impressive display of golf over the weekend at the Wyndham Championship in Greensboro, North Carolina. It was make or break. Here's a guy who was 105th in the FedEx Cup points going into Wyndham, had to win it, and he did. And he finished 47th, and that got him in and actually puts him in good form to advance beyond even this week based on how he performs. So the question has to beg for Michael Brennan. Did he know what he needed to do to make the FedEx Cup playoffs? You bet he did.
Yeah, I needed like a three-way tie for second or better. I knew it from the start of the week. That was my goal going into the week. I mean, the goal is just to play good golf. You never know where that is going to leave you. You know, you can hit great putts that don't go in. You can hit bad putts that do go in. There's, you know, a little bit of variance, we could call it, in golf. And so, like, definitely the goal was to try to go win the golf tournament, but that's kind of my goal most other weeks. But I knew I was coming in this week in good form. I was playing good golf.
This is an impressive guy on a lot of fronts. Great golf swing. I think that maybe the knack on him had been that he's not the greatest putter. But as you saw, just with that birdie he made on the last hole and the way he saved pars, made birdies throughout the last 2 days, the putter is hardly a question right now. He played at Wake Forest on a Lanny Watkins scholarship. He won 8 times there, 8 individual titles in his collegiate career, including medalist honors at the ACC Championship in both 2023 and 2024. He has a degree in economics. So this is a guy, even if the tour didn't work out, he was positioning himself for his future quite well. But the tour life has worked out so far. He went and played the PGA Tour Americas, Latin America, up in Canada, in 2025. Last year, he won 3 times on that tour. Bang, he comes right out on the PGA Tour and wins in the fall. And then when he really had to get it done, he did so indeed. Interesting little side note. He plays out of River Creek Club in Leesburg, Virginia. It's a place that, you know, it may not get much recognition, but it's got a little of a personal note for me. I'm playing in a charity event at River Creek Club in mid-September. It's the Keller Williams McLean Great Falls Charity Golf Tournament that's been held a number of years, and it benefits the Youth for Tomorrow, which is the charity that Joe Gibbs, the former Redskins coach, has been a long supporter of, and really the one he put that charity on the map. And this particular year, we are honoring the memory of the great late Sonny Jurgensen, the longtime quarterback for the Redskins. And it'll be a very, very special weekend. And now, you know, you've got 3 in a row. You've got 3 young players, Jackson Koivun and now Michael Thorburn, Michael Brennan, in the winner's circle on successive weeks. Koivun went in with the 70th spot in hand going into Wyndham. Son of a gun, if he just didn't hold on barely with as few starts as he had to get into the FedEx Cup, I think that's the first of many times you're going to be seeing him playing in those big events at the end of the year. I feel really bad for Bo Hostler. Bo Hostler didn't win. Bo Hostler, now it's 251 starts on the PGA Tour, without a victory. He's had some terrific rounds. He had, even before last week, when he was just a kid, he played well. He's an amateur. He led the U.S. Open when he was 17 years old at one point. And it looked like for all the world that, you know, he was going to win. Obviously, he didn't win the U.S. Open, but certainly he would win on the PGA Tour, right? Well, it's tough. It can be brutal. It can be hard. As my dear late friend Bob Bupka said, you know, nothing guaranteed out there. And there's nothing guaranteed that it's going to happen, that you're going to win. And Hostler was no different than Michael Brennan. He had to win the Wyndham Championship to get in to the FedEx Cup playoffs. Shot 67 in the final round, but it just wasn't enough. Brennan, with his 66, he finished 19 under par, did Bo Hostler. And that's good for second place and not good enough to get in to the FedEx Cup. But he's a guy you root for. Comes across a very likable guy. Feel bad for him. You root for him. But as they say, it's on with the show. And Brennan's in good form. Expect him to play very well in Memphis. Congratulations. Just got the word that Lexi Thompson, the great LPGA star, and her husband, Max Provost, are expecting their first child in February of 2027. Very excited and happy for Lexi. We wish that couple all the very best, obviously. Vince Cellini. I have so much respect for Vince Cellini. Very proud Cleveland native. Got his first job out of college working at a local affiliate in Cleveland, then had the opportunity to go to work for CNN Sports Tonight, back when CNN Sports Tonight was a big deal. And the lineup of talent, of on-air talent on CNN on the sports side, as you'll hear from Vince, was pretty impressive. Wait till you hear the story about the very first interview he conducted at Golf Channel in January of 2003. It's quite the story. He also was involved with the Big Break series for a couple of years. That Big Break was a huge deal for Golf Channel when they were really kind of cutting their teeth and getting going in the marketplace. But Vince, you know, as I mentioned, you see him now on the PGA Tour Champions Learning Center. It's terrific. You can learn a lot. Really can help your own game quite a bit. But, you know, Vince has worked the PGA Championship. He's heavily involved with the NFL, with the NBA, with NASCAR. He is as versatile as they come. And Vince Cellini, folks, is, to me, the very epitome of why we have this show to begin with. This show is about great storytelling. It always has been. We've always tried that. And I think we succeeded mightily by having Vince on, because he is just that, a great storyteller. You're going to really enjoy this. And please remember as well to follow and like Musings on Golf on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you enjoy your podcasts. And right after these words from our corporate partners at William & Harry Golf and the Friars Golf Club, you'll hear a terrific interview with Vince Cellini of Golf Channel. Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com. Is your golf life stuck in a bunker of country club hassles? Tired of the wait lists and the six-figure initiation fees? Well, at the Friars Golf Club, we take care of all of the hard work. Planning exclusive trips and unforgettable rounds on top-rated courses, so all you have to do is show up, have fun, and make lifelong friendships on the first tee, the 19th hole, and far beyond. Our terrific 2026 lineup includes international destinations like Dubai and Scandinavia, plus top domestic resorts such as Sand Valley and Black Desert, and access to some great private clubs. Join the Friars Golf Club today. Email us at info@thefriars.com the word musings in the subject line to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. We invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience with the Friars Golf Club. Our special guest today has covered the sporting world with distinction for more than 40 years. From his early days in his hometown of Cleveland, to his years in Atlanta with a pioneering cable network, to interviews of late with top players on Golf Channel's PGA Tour Champions Learning Center, his versatility and professionalism have always stood out. I'm really looking forward to this. We have so much to discuss with a former tight end from the College of Worcester, Vince Cellini. Vince, welcome to Musings on Golf. How are you?
Hi, Kelly. Thank you so much. Wow, we're really gonna go back in time, aren't we?
Well, and you were a really good tight end. You held or set three records: what, most touchdowns in a season in a career, what, most yards per catch in a season. You had a lot of fun there, didn't you?
I did. I wish we threw more.
Yeah.
I always said I had a good yards per catch because I never knew when I was going to see the ball again. So I had to make the most of every catch. But, yeah, I had a really good junior year. A lot of good things happened to me that year. And it was fun. You know, I was not a highly recruited player, but I love the game. And I said, let me try this. And I was just a little D3 ham and egger. But I had a great time. We played a very I would think at that time, I know that that level of football was very good across the country. We had several teams in our conference who competed in the Stag Bowl, and so we had a lot of nationally ranked teams, and I had a teammate for 3 years, an offensive lineman who eventually went to the NFL and played in a Super Bowl, named a fellow named Blake Moore. So I was okay. I could catch. So I was decent.
Did you play tight end as well in high school, or did you play both ways?
I played outside linebacker in high school in a 4-4 defense, but I was the second tight end in a 2 tight end set because we had a tight end named Frank Ties in my class who really looked the part. He was a power forward on the basketball team, and big, tall, strong kid, good guy. So I got to play 2 tight end sets when we ran that. But I always knew when I went to college, I said, you know, I'm not really great linebacker, but I think I can catch well, and I love that aspect of the game. So I moved there exclusively, and we ran a pro set at Worcester. So it worked out. I got to play a lot as a freshman, as a messenger, and then the next 3 years I started there. So and I just got together with a couple of teammates in Akron when I was in Firestone for the Colleague Company's championship. So Still see those guys all the time. But it was a fun experience. And I tell people, you know, I think some, particularly where I live in the South, I mean, it's SEC football or bust. I said, you know, there's a lot of quality small college football, including like Mount Union, University of Mount Union now up in Alliance, Ohio, which is a national power. And you're seeing more and more NFL head coaches come out of the Division III ranks. Sirianni from the Eagles played at Mount Union.
Yeah.
Josh McDaniels is a John Carroll guy, I think. So you see a lot of these guys in Division III that are moving into the NFL in coaching capacities. So it's must be doing something right. But, it was so much fun. It was really a fun time. And every now and then I'll get the scrapbook out and look at some of the old clips, and it was a good ride. I did okay.
Well, and things evolve, right? Whether in the NFL or certainly, you know, before we came on, you and I and Janice Self were chatting about your career and the vast changes, Vince, in the media world. You mentioned, for example, that you started out literally on a typewriter, right? All the way to the world we have today where everything is instantaneous. And I mentioned at the outset that you've been involved with for 40 years, right out of college, really, for your local TV station. It's amazing the changes, right?
No question. And when I tell people I worked on a typewriter, they're like, what? Typewriter? It's like they have a quill with ink that I dipped into a...
Yeah.
Like right. Ben Franklin. I said, yeah, we, you know, you put it in there and zit, 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 and you know, at 5 o'clock in a newsroom at WJW back in Cleveland, you know, you'd hear the clacking of typewriter. It was mayhem at that hour. And then you're right cranking your story out and getting things together. So yeah, we had that and carbon paper, and the director got a copy and you got a copy as the anchor and the teleprompter got a copy. And so it was, but it was a great way to learn, because it was like a earthy way to learn. It was a, from a ground up way to learn. And that's how I learned about writing. I learned about working with amazing veteran photographers, videographers that I would go out with. These guys were on the beat for 40 years and they shot everything that you could possibly shoot. And I really learned about context, composition of a video, how to make that tell a story. So, and to be around great reporters, I think I was trying to be a sponge early on and learn from these guys who were great writers and newspaper writers who transitioned to television. So incredible. And 3/4-inch tape. We had, you know, all these tapes we had to carry. So
you were talking about shooting the Browns game and how much tape you had to carry, right?
Yeah. We had a guy on the roof. So he shot 4 tapes and then a guy on the ground level. So I had 8 tapes that I would carry back along with my notepad, and they're stacked up like big, encyclopedias. I'm carrying these back to the station, and it's all cumbersome, but it was a great time. It was just it was a wonderful time to learn the business because, it wasn't as spread out and homogenized as it is today. There were limited jobs across the country. You were very fortunate if you were the Monday through Friday or the weekend sports anchor guy, which I was. I just loved it. It's what I always wanted to do. And I'm so grateful that I have been in that era, and now I see what's happening today and opportunities and the fact that you can have a podcast. Zoom. So this is how far we've come with being able to transmit information. Amazing.
When you were an up and comer, an aspiring broadcaster, announcer, were there figures on a national level, broadcasters who you really loved listening to it and maybe in a way patterned your style after?
Yeah, I was always a big Bob Costas fan. And Costas, to me, although he wasn't that much older, I love the fact that he, you know, when I got into television, they used to say, you know, you should really write down to about a 6th grade level so people understand. And, and Costas never did that. He never dumbed anything down. You know, he raised people up to make you think. I loved his presentation, his versatility, how he handled interviews. I'm a big long form interview guy. So I kind of looked up to him and finally got to meet him eventually. But we were a CNN sports station. Well, CNN station, we would roll tape on CNN 24 hours. So I watched Nick Charles and Fred Hickman do Sports Tonight. Do you remember Nick Charles and Fred Hickman?
Very well.
So. Yes. This was, if you don't remember CNN Sports, we were kind of the counter to ESPN through the 1980s and then 90s.
Very much. And
here were two guys. You know, Nick Charles is this good-looking, dashing guy. He had black hair like me, and he wore suits that I like to wear. And then you have Fred Hickman, who's like the coolest, most talented guy. And I'm like, wow, that looks like a really fun place to work. That would be, and I thought, I think, you know, that's what I want to do. So those guys influenced me as well. Not only that, but I worked with a fellow named John Telich, who was our sports anchor. And John is, I want to say, 5 years older. And as a young sportscaster, and John was a young sportscaster, he brought me in and really took me under his wing. He didn't see me as somebody who threatened him. Oh, this kid's going to take my job. Instead, he guided. He made sure that you understood writing. He understood what a good story selection was, what was important, what was newsworthy. So I learned a lot from John, just observing him, and his influence on me still continues today because he's one of the nicest. He's a great friend and he's one of the nicest people. So I think you have to have someone there that you can learn from. And then you have to have great direction. And we had a man named Virgil Dominic, who's still with us, who was our news director then and became general manager. And Kelly, he is really the only person I've ever worked for at that level who had been on television. He had been an anchor. So he understood that side of the camera and the presentation. And he had a philosophy that went through our whole news department that stayed with us, and a direction. So because he understood that, he handpicked people that he knew he could put into that lane to deliver that information. So he was another huge influence who gave me a break literally off the street as a student. I just got out of school and got an internship there. So all of these people give you opportunities, and what you do with those opportunities is up to you. But yes, to answer your question, yeah, I had a lot of those people. I watched a lot. I think I don't want to say pilfered or stole bits and pieces from people, but I think we take what we like, you know, in style. So,
you know, it's fascinating to hear you say this. So when I was a kid all through my 20s, I sat with my dad at RFK Stadium in Washington as a big Redskins fan. And I would literally keep notes of the game in the game day program, stats, how many yards John Riggins had and so forth. And then eventually, for 3 seasons, I was the statistician for the Redskins radio network. Wow. Had the good fortune of sitting next to Sam Huff and Sonny Jurgensen. And so that was, man. That was right. That was a really cool thing.
Oh, right? Man, I can imagine. That isn't that great? Oh, my gosh.
So I was, you mentioned early before we came on about for your dad, and as a Cleveland Indians fan, obviously Clevelanders have struggled with a lot of, tough luck through the years, but getting to those World Series, thinking about your dad, because of, it sounds like that was a big part of his upbringing, right?
It was. My dad was first generation Italian American. His dad came from Abruzzi, Italy, as did my other grandfather from Italy. But my dad was, you're going to get me started. So
I understand, man.
Good guy.
Yeah. It's great when we have fathers like that, Vince.
Sports. Sports was our connection.
Yes.
He was just a blue collar guy, but he loved sports, and that was a connection. So.
And to be able to go to ball games with him, right? And to be able to talk to him.
Oh, that was the one thing we connected on. You know, like we didn't talk about it and say, Dad, you know, I was in school today and we were reading Pilgrim's Progress, and I think Chaucer is trying to use this as an analogy. You know, so he wasn't exactly into the arts. You know, the old man. I couldn't say, you know, Dad, what do you think? Is Guys and Dolls a good musical? I mean, I think really. So you know, he was a blue collar guy. But a great guy. And, you know, sports was the connection for us.
Sure.
That was our common thread. And so he, you know, it became important to him and it'd be important to me. He loved baseball, loved Ted Williams. He was a huge Ted Williams fan. But, we would go to Tribe games. And, he was that guy that summertime, and when I was a teenager or a college student, I come back from being out, it's midnight, and he's listening to a West Coast game on the radio.
Exactly.
They're 20 games out. And he's like, hey, we're down 4-2, he tell me as I walk by him on the porch. But anyway, he instilled really basic good information regarding sports for me. All of his, everything he did was boiled down to real basic. And he would say things like, always go 100% in practice. That's how you get hurt. You be friends after the game. Play hard during, and he had good philosophies. Use your hands in this situation. Stay off the plate a little bit. So it was always good football, baseball. Didn't throw compliments around too much. Not one of those like, hey, son, you're really doing great. But and the other thing, Kelly, was my older brother was a superstar in high school. He was the athlete that I wanted to be. So he was a great influence as well. But, all this connection goes back to my dad. Baseball and – I always wanted to see, as a Cleveland fan, the Indians get to a World Series and win a World Series because my dad saw it. Super Bowl would have been great as well, and I was close a couple of times as a fan with that. But Clevelanders are kind of a long-suffering group, But spring comes around, fall, September comes around, and they're optimistic again, that something good can happen. So –
we're going to, I mentioned about the work I did as a statistician. That was a lot of fun. But as a kid for you, were you the kid growing up calling games, pretending that you were announcing games? What was the interest level in communications and in announcing? Was that always there for you?
Well, it's two parts. I was more the kid who would go outside with a football and throw it through the telephone lines and pretend I was Dave Casper or John Mackey. I watched tight ends when I was a kid on TV.
Really?
Yeah, I watched all of those guys.
Ring. Why tight ends?
I thought that was like a really cool position. Milt Morin was an old tight end from the Browns. I used to watch him play. I just thought these guys get to block. They get to catch passes too. So I was a fan of watching all of these guys play. So I would pretend that I was that guy, or I would throw a ball off the roof and see if I could catch it off the roof. And I wasn't more of a play-by-play guy, but I knew at about 10 or 11 that I wanted to be on television. And the story is, as a sixth grader, we went down to an educational center in downtown Cleveland. They would bus us out to Cleveland Public Schools. And it was all about pioneers and how people lived. And it was like this history of the country. I don't know. They had like different displays. One of the displays was a closed circuit television where you could sit down and be seen on television and see yourself, which was like freaking magic back then for me. I was like, what? This is unbelievably cool. And you're watching yourself speak on television. Isn't that weird? And so I saw that and I was like, holy, this is what I wanted to do. And I actually would watch a lot of local sportscasters growing up. Jim Grainer was a great sportscaster. John Fitzgerald in Cleveland. Nev Chandler was a huge influence for me as well, who I got to be colleagues with. So as a kid, I said, this is what I want to do. And I had for Christmas, I got a cassette recorder and I would record my voice and interview my family and just listen to myself back. And so that's how I kind of became fascinated with that whole communication aspect of things.
I had some similarities there growing up with while listening to and watching the great Warner Wolf.
Oh my gosh. Let's go to the videotape.
Listening to and watching the great George Michael, who really was ahead of his time in so many with Sports Machine, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Those are vast influences. It certainly as a kid, for me as a sportsaholic, and it's always stayed with you in some way, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I did want to ask you about Jurgensen. So one of the things we get to do is meet people who we probably watched as kids. We were fans, right? So was Jurgensen just how you wanted him to be as a person?
He's a lovely guy. He was the Southern gentleman. And it was so interesting, the contrast between he and Mr. Hoff. So Sonny in the booth had the cigar. It never was lit, but he always had the cigar.
Right.
And he was saying hello to everybody and just as kind as could be. Sam, on the other hand, he still had the pads on. He was still ready to go.
Oh, he was still revved up.
I asked him one time, I said, Mr. Hoff, was there ever a quarterback who you never got a good shot on? And I knew the answer to the question before I asked him. So was there anybody who you would have just loved to have laid out? And he looked at me and he pointed, his eyes narrowed. He pointed to me. He says, let me tell you something. If that, you know what, Fran Tarkin had walked in here right now, I would blindside that you know who. I'd chase that you know who. I'd chase that so and so for 10 years and never caught him. But Sonny, Sonny, who passed away unfortunately earlier this year, was just he was a great guy. And you know, you been around a long time in Cleveland. You know athletes who are beloved. Right. Sonny Jurgensen and John Riggins, for that matter, beloved, not just great athletes, but beloved by the people who followed them.
I try to tell people now, I told my sons, Riggins is so, we don't talk about him as much as we should talk about him. So underrated as a running back. He had one of the greatest postseasons in the history of football. The guy, I worked with Mark May for a while at TMZ, and he talked about Riggins. And, you know, back then he was, you know, people forget Riggins was a state 100-yard dash champion in Kansas.
He was big and fast.
Brutal.
And if you watch some of the highlights of games, when he turned the corner, you could catch him.
He outran guys who had angles on him.
Yes.
And but a physical could run. I mean, just great running back. And another guy I wish I had a chance to meet. But I was going to say, for me, like that guy, when I always, I'm so pleased when people are who you want them to be. And for a year, I had Kenny Stabler as a analyst on CNN.
Yeah,
CNN sports show. And he was exactly the guy that I hoped he would be. He's Southern cool, nothing bother the guy, roll off his back. I got this. So you can imagine him at quarterback, like Sonny, it's going to be okay. He's going to make something happen. It's going to be good.
When I took the job that I had with the PGA of America, I was there for 12 years or so, and sure. I was struggling my first year, and I just stayed in touch with Mr. Jurgensen, and I talked to him, and he said, just to your point, he said, Kelly, just hang in there. He said, it's a great job. You got great people. Give it a year at least. Just hang in there. Because I was away from my family, you know, with little kids because I had moved to Florida, that type thing. But you're right. And though that meant so much to me that a guy of that stature, Vince, cared, right? He didn't have to. He could be aloof and say, you know, who is that? Don't bother me, you know? But that's, you're right. And that's a great point because that's I think, why people become legendary, because they're exactly the person you hope they'll be.
Right.
And they're just themselves.
I think those guys are from another era as well.
Yes.
They grew up in a different way. They're kids of the 50s probably, right? Sonny probably grew up in the 50s.
That's correct.
And I think exactly that's right. That's how my dad was, a World War II guy, came through everything. And so they're just from a different, they're a different breed, those guys. You know, they're all made out of steel. And I think for me, that guy was Nev Chandler, who I mentioned, who was the ABC sports anchor, but he called Browns games and Indians games in Cleveland. And I remember getting the offer from CNN Sports. It was tough because Cleveland's my hometown. I could probably work there the rest of my life, but I'm pushing 30 and I'm still a weekend guy. And, you know, and I talked to Nev about it and he's like, Vincey, you got to go. You know, this is a great opportunity, you know, and he cared enough to give me that advice. He wasn't like, I don't give, you know, whatever you want to do, you know, and that meant a lot. So when people do give you that type of advice and when they feel like, you know, what they have to say is powerful and influential, that is a great thing. But you got two of the best. You got two absolute Redskins legends, man. Oh, that's
no question about it.
That's so awesome. But yeah. And, you know, but it is tough. It is tough to leave home. I left home and I, you know, my whole life had been growing up there and I had a 9-month old baby. And my wife was a Cleveland girl and she had never left home either. So, you know, you go for the kind of the unknown, but it's an adventure and, you know, it's tough to leave family behind and, you know, all those relationships, friendships.
No question about it. And some people do it more easily than other, having such a lovely chat so far. And that will continue with Vince Cellini here on Musings on Golf.
Right now, we'll take a quick break for a word from our friends at William & Harry Golf. Then we'll come right back to more of our terrific interview with Vince Cellini. Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com.
So we've talked legends in terms of Sonny Jurgensen and Sam Huff and John Riggins. It's my understanding, Vince Cellini, your very first interview at Golf Channel was with easily the greatest legend that I know of in the history of the game. Is that right? How did that come to be with Mr. Palmer?
So I leave CNN Sports because we have a new general manager or a new vice president or whatever his title was at CNN. Rick Kaplan decided that we were doing good numbers, but he decided that if taking over CNN, if it's a sports story, we'll cover it as news. So essentially the sports department was basically dwindling away to nothing. Yeah. Leave there, took a severance buyout for a little over a year. And so Tony Tortorici from Golf Channel kind of contacted me, said, do you like golf? I said, yeah, I like golf. I never covered golf to that extent. Jim Huber, The great Jim Huber was our golf guy.
What a guy he was.
What a wonderful man. Another guy that was a great influence as well. I could go on about Jim as well.
Yeah.
Who's an amazing writer and person. The rest of the soul. So he said, have you thought about it? I said, well, I had to get back to work. So I'm living in the Atlanta area and go to Orlando and pack up my kids again. They're, you know, going into fourth grade, seventh grade, and ninth grade. They weren't happy. My sons were not too thrilled with, you know, leaving junior high and then high school.
Absolutely.
But I told them, and I'll get to what you're asking me in a minute, but I told them, I said, look, and I don't know why I thought this, because I thought this when I was in high school. I'm going to go to college. I don't know anybody. It's an adventure. I'll rewrite my script. I've got a blank canvas. Told them the same thing. I said, guys, it's an opportunity to be something, anything you want to be. No one knows you. You can restart. It's a fresh slate. And I said, you're going to be the new guy somewhere, someday. You're going to be the new guy in college. You'll be the new guy on the job. You'll be the new guy in town. You'll be the new. So this is just preparing you for what you're going to be. Anyway, I get there. Haven't been on television in over a year. First broadcast, because they always talk to Mr. Palmer, first, as one of the founders of Golf Channel, is a live hour, live audience in the studio with Arnold Palmer. So I'm a wreck. You know, I'm still, because I'm trying to make an impression. I go, oh, geez, I haven't been on TV. I'm nervous. Meet him beforehand. He's in makeup. Hi, Mr. Palmer. How are you doing? Good. You're from Cleveland? He's from Latrobe. So he's a Steeler fan. He's like, I'm sorry that you're from Cleveland and you're Browns. So he's killing me already. We have a great, great conversation. And you remember that Golf Talk was hosted by Peter Kessler.
Absolutely.
Where I got there.
Yes.
I never met Peter, but Peter and Arnold Palmer had this on-air little confrontation about legality of wedges and blah, blah, blah. He leaves. So I'm saying that to say this. As I walk out of the makeup room, I said, Mr. Palmer, looking forward to it. He goes, hey, remember, just remember what happened to the last guy. If make it good. And I kind of went, ha, ha, ha. I didn't know if he was serious or he was putting me on. You know, I kind of nervously laughed, but he was wonderful. And what a gentleman. I'm sure you had dealings with Arnold Palmer too.
And I did. And it's true, right, Vince? He put you at ease.
Made you feel like you were the focus and it was something he wanted to do. He put you at ease all the time.
Yeah. Arnold had that rare ability for sure. I interacted with him many times. My father was the head professional at a men's club of the D.C. area, the past president of the PGA of America. So he and Mr. Palmer were friends for a long time. So, yes. And I think ultimately Jack Nicklaus began to understand that. And Jack took on that role as well. At first, Jack was the young buck who was knocking Arnold off the pedestal. And then over time, Jack became more of the guy who knew how to conduct himself at press conferences, patted guys on the shoulder. But still, there just was no other Arnold Palmer. He was a true American icon, certainly in the game of golf.
No question. And those were the guys that made me, that I felt all of a sudden I'm 16 years old again around those.
Yeah.
Guys, you know, it wasn't when I got there, Tiger was really at the peak of his powers. And they were like, Tiger. And I wasn't intimidated by Tiger or to talk to any player, really. But to be in the presence of Arnold Palmer and then Jack Nicklaus as well. Jack can be intimidating as well. Wonderful gentleman. He's another. I've done some work. I got to host one of the clinics at the Memorial. We sat there and did some stuff in Jupiter with him over the years. So, and plus, he's an Ohio guy. He's a legend.
Yes.
Where I grew up.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean that's part of the experience. But I always loved the older guys. I loved Gary Player. I love Lee Trevino. I love just being around those guys because they don't have a filter. And that's the nice part about being with the champions, PGA Tour champions now, is that I've kind of grown up. We've all moved into this other stage of life. And I covered those guys on the tour. And now it's so much easier and comfortable to be able to talk to them, not just about golf, but I stop and talk and we talk about everything now, you know, so just being around these guys. And Kelly, I wish they had even more of an appreciation of those guys on that tour because they are absolute treasure vaults of information and
Yes.
experience. And I think they're the most underused athletes of any sport, really.
And as you're alluding to, they're very much willing to share. They're very much open
Very.
to what you ask them, and we're happy to expand upon it.
Very much so. I think at this point they've taken the filter off, or the
Yeah.
governor off the cart, and they're like, yeah, I'll tell you whatever I really think, which is refreshing. And to be around them is that same refreshing feedback every single time. So when you get those guys, and you can do a deep dive in there with a Colin Montgomery who's lived everything as well. We did a Ryder Cup show with four past captains, which I thought was one of the best things we've ever done years ago. I don't know why we don't do that again and again with every major, and have, because we have major winners. So why not have
Yes.
these guys, three Masters winners or three PGA championship? We should have these guys on all the time and do specials with them. So I'm pitching that now if anyone
I
wants.
love that. Yeah.
Anyone.
Has there been one Learning Center episode with one individual that stood out? You mentioned about Colin Montgomery has for whatever reason, whether it was his story about how he grew in the game or just his personal story.
Well, it was a story I did recently. I just did it a year ago. And it's one of the stories I did with Jason Karen, who is a
Yes.
professional at Mill River Club on Long Island. And we got to go there and spend time with him, with he and his wife, and we were able to watch his daily routine there and see how he worked at the club. He's still giving lessons, but then again, he's competing on PGA Tour Champions as well. And I think it kind of humanized this whole thing. It's a really cool story. He's got two beautiful little daughters, and they're just, I love doing that. Unfortunately, recently we've had some guys who are dealing with some illnesses, and so it's been this rash of guys who are battling cancer, and dealing with that, which is pretty raw and emotional. But I think the cool part about that tour is, in life, getting a second chance or another chapter in a career. And there's unfinished business for a lot of the players who
Question about
it's their chance to check a box and say, I'm pretty good. I'm still okay. Because Kel, you know how golf is. I mean, I used to go up, I used to, one of my fun things to do was ask guys, have you ever quit the game? You ever thought about quitting? Anybody. And they go, today? No, not today. But everyone you've ever taught, I'm sure everybody's talking about, you know what? I'm done.
I'm
I'm
done,
done.
right.
And it's redemption. The PGA Tour Champions is redemption for these guys. And like I said, I think you're going to get the most honest, unfiltered answers that you'll get anywhere in golf regarding from Ryder Cup to majors. You want a course breakdown, they'll do that
Yeah.
for you. You want insight, they bring that to you as well. So I don't know that I gave you a specific one, but I just enjoy so much my time with them. So I'm living in the Atlanta area, and go to Orlando and pack up my kids again. They're, going into fourth grade, seventh grade, and ninth grade. They weren't happy. My sons were not too thrilled with, leaving junior high and then high school.
Okay. Absolutely.
But I told them, and I'll get to what you're asking me in a minute, but I told them, I said, look, and I don't know why I thought this, because I thought this when I was in high school. I'm going to go to college. I don't know anybody. It's an adventure. I'll rewrite my script. I've got a blank canvas. Told them the same thing. I said, guys, it's an opportunity to be something, anything you want to be. No one knows you. You can restart. It's a fresh slate. And I said, you're going to be the new guy somewhere, someday. You're going to be the new guy in college. You'll be the new guy on the job. You'll be the new guy in town. You'll be the new. So this is just preparing you for what you're going to be. Anyway, I get there. Haven't been on television in over a year. First broadcast, because they always talk to Mr. Palmer first, as one of the founders of Golf Channel, is a live hour, live audience in the studio with Arnold Palmer. So I'm a wreck. I'm still, because I'm trying to make an impression. I go, oh, geez, I haven't been on TV. I'm nervous. Meet him beforehand. He's in makeup. Hi, Mr. Palmer. How are you doing? Good. You're from Cleveland. He's from Latrobe. So he's a Steeler fan. He's like, I'm sorry that you're from Cleveland and you're Brown. So he's killing me already. We have a great conversation. And do you remember that Golf Talk was hosted by Peter Kessler?
Absolutely.
Where I got there.
Yes.
I never met Peter, but Peter and Arnold Palmer had this on-air little confrontation about the legality of wedges and blah, blah, blah. He leaves. So I'm saying that to say this. As I walk out of the makeup room, I said, Mr. Palmer, looking forward to it. He goes, hey, remember, just remember what happened to the last guy. If make it good. And I kind of went, ha, ha, ha. I didn't know if he was serious or he was putting me on. You know, I kind of nervously laughed. But he was wonderful. And what a gentleman. I'm sure you had dealings with Arnold Palmer too.
I did. And it's true, right, Vince? He put you at ease.
Made you feel like you were the focus. And yes. It was something he wanted to do. He put you at ease all the time.
Yeah. Arnold had that rare ability for sure. I interacted with him many times. My father was the head professional at a men's club of the D.C. area, past president of the PGA of America. So he and Mr. Palmer were friends for a long time. So, yes. And I think ultimately Jack Nicklaus began to understand that. And Jack took on that role as well. At first, Jack was the young buck who was knocking Arnold off the pedestal. And then over time, Jack became more of the guy who knew how to conduct himself at press conferences, patted guys on the shoulder. But still, there just was no other Arnold Palmer. He was a true American icon, certainly in the game of golf.
No question. And those were the guys that made me, that I felt all of a sudden I'm 16 years old again around them.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't when I got there, Tiger was really at the peak of his powers. And they were like, Tiger. And I wasn't intimidated by Tiger or to talk to any player, really. But to be in the presence of Arnold Palmer and then Jack Nicklaus as well. Jack can be intimidating as well. Wonderful gentleman. He's another. I've done some work. I got to host one of the clinics at the Memorial. We sat there and did some stuff in Jupiter with him over the years. So, and plus, he's an Ohio guy. He's a legend.
Yes.
Where I grew up.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, that's that's part of the experience. But I always loved the older guys. I loved Gary Player. I loved Lee Trevino. I love just being around those guys because they don't have a filter. And that's the nice part about being with the champions, PGA Tour champions now, is that I've kind of grown up. We've all moved into this other stage of life. And I covered those guys on the tour. And now it's so much easier and comfortable to be able to talk to them, not just about golf, but I stop and talk and we talk about everything now, you know, so just being around these guys. And Kelly, I wish they had even more of an appreciation of those guys on that tour because they are absolute treasure vaults of information and experience. Yes. And I think they're the most underused athletes of any sport, really.
And as you're alluding to, they're very much willing to share. They're very much open to what you ask them and will happy to expand upon it.
Very much so. I think at this point they've taken the filter off or the governor off the cart, and they're like, "Yeah, I'll tell you whatever I really think," which is refreshing. And to be around them is that same refreshing feedback every single time. So when you get those guys, and you know, you can do a deep dive in there with a Colin Montgomery who's lived everything as well. We did a Ryder Cup show with four past captains, which I thought was one of the best things we've ever done years ago. I don't know why we don't do that again and again with every major and because we have major winners. So why not have these guys, three Masters winners or three PGA championship? We should have these guys on all the time and do specials with them. So I'm pitching that now. If anyone
knows. I love that. Yeah. Anyone? Has there been one Learning Center episode with one individual that stood out? You mentioned about Colin Montgomery has for whatever reason, whether it was his story about how he grew in the game or just his personal story.
Well, you know, it was a story I did recently. I just did it a year ago. And it's one of the stories I did with Jason Caron, who is a professional at Mill River Club on Long Island.
Yeah.
And we got to go there and spend time with him, with he and his wife. And we were able to watch his daily routine there and see how he worked with the club. He's still giving lessons, But then again, he's competing on PGA Tour champions as well. And I think it kind of humanized this whole thing. It's a really cool story. He's got two beautiful little daughters, and they're just, I love doing that. I, you know, unfortunately, recently we've had some guys who are dealing with some illnesses. And so it's been this rash of guys who are battling cancer and dealing with that, which is pretty raw and emotional. But I think the cool part about that tour is in life, getting a second chance or another chapter in a career. And there's unfinished business for a lot of the players who
question about it.
It's their chance to check a box and say, you know, I'm pretty good. I'm still okay. Because, you know, Kel, you know how golf is. I mean, I used to, one of my fun things to do was ask guys, have you ever quit the game? You ever thought about quitting? You know, anybody? And they go, today? No, not today. But everyone you've ever taught, I'm sure everybody's talking about, you know what? I'm done.
I'm done. Right.
And it's redemption. The PGA Tour Champions is redemption for these guys. And like I said, I think you're going to get the most honest, unfiltered answers that you'll get anywhere in golf regarding from Ryder Cup to majors. You want a course breakdown, they'll do that for you. You want insight, they bring that to you as well. So I don't know that I gave you a specific one, but I just enjoy so much my time with them. It was a really great experience. It's a grueling day, Kelly. You start at about 6:30 in the morning, and you finish maybe 7 or 8 o'clock at night. You shoot an entire episode in a day.
Really? You shot the whole episode in a day?
Yes. You move sets. You're moving sets. You're moving people. You're moving camera. It's like a circus because everyone has their own camera, own sound guy. It's very, very complicated, very tedious, and they're still doing rewrites that night at 10, 11 o'clock for the next day. So it can be grueling as far as the shoot is concerned, but I think really fun. And it turns out that, you know, we get Tommy Gainey's out of this and
yes, that's right.
We get, and again, I'm going to have a senior moment here on the tour.
Two gloves, Tommy is certainly
my tall competitor. I think of his name, but we get people who are actually, you know, going to play and be successful in golf.
Hey, I want to go back to something you said earlier and go back to the time.
Tony Finau.
Sorry about that. Yes, exactly. you talked earlier about looking up to the likes of Fred Hickman and Nick Charles, and boy, I'd love to do that one day. And you did,
yeah.
Right? What was that like? I'm interested on a couple of fronts. Was that like, did you ever spend any time? We lost Ted Turner recently. Did you ever spend any time with Ted Turner in your years at CNN? And what was that like? Yeah, kind of going up against ESPN through CNN Sports Tonight. You had a very, you know, just a great guy with Fred Hickman. You had with Van Allwright. You had some real interesting characters there. What was that like for you to transition from that hometown boy in Cleveland to the bright lights of Atlanta and an international audience, really?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, with Ted Turner, I would see Ted Turner. I didn't really have any sit-down dealings with him, but he was always around. I mean, you would see him. Next to the sports department was the cafeteria area, and he would see him in line with a tray and getting food, or he'd be walking through. He might be on the elevator with him and say hi, and he was very hands-on about what he liked or didn't like there. And he was, thank God, Ted Turner had the vision to say, you know what, I'm going to try 24-hour news, and he gave everyone a career, all these careers, and all of these lives.
Yes.
And, you know, what a pioneer, whether it's America's Cup, whether it's the Goodwill Games. He was a visionary, you know. He was a guy who saw what wasn't there yet and took a chance and took a shot and bet on himself. Very interesting guy. Very, very dynamic person. Probably eccentric to a certain point, but who isn't that's very successful like that? So thank goodness that he had the wherewithal to do that. As far as going there, so I spent 7 years. You know, we have great numbers there. I'm the weekend guy. I'm pretty polished at that point. I'm pretty confident. In fact, I'm probably pretty cocky. I'm like, well, I'm going to get here. And you know what? I think I'm the guy. So I get there and I'm going to show these guys, you know, how it's done. So as soon as I get there, I mean, we have the likes of Gary Miller, who I sat next to, who is very, very talented. One of the most talented people I've ever worked with. Nick and Fred. Dan Hicks is there. Anna Storm is there.
That's right. Region.
Tom Kirkland. We have a really good, we have a good line. Jim Huber is there. We have a good line. Jim Walton is the fellow who hired me, who's an executive producer, great person. And the great Bill McPhail, who worked for CBS Sports, was the head of the sports department there. His brother was Lee McPhail, and his father was Larry McPhail, former baseball executive. So you get there, and all of a sudden I'm like, wow, you go from covering your 4 minutes to now you've got a show to do where every story is someone's lead story. So it's while it's in our third block, it's somebody's headline story here. You better know who plays where, what's the name of the stadium, the history of that team, pronounce names correctly. There was a lot going on. So all of a sudden, I am humbled. I was like, holy mackerel, these people are really talented. They're really good. And early on, my first show, I worked with Hannah Storm, and she was wonderful to calm me down, got through that. And my first gig was to solo the 2:30 a.m. show, which is 11:30 West Coast. Did a half hour by myself.
Oh, by yourself.
Here's a rundown. Go. Every highlight. Yeah. Every highlight, every bump, tease, wrote it all. Every word. So it was demanding, but it made you step your game up, you know. And when you have great people, I'm a big believer in being around great people. I think that they make you better. If you're on a team with great players, I always wanted somebody great on the set with me because I felt like it made the show better. I didn't want to say, well, I hope I get more stories I wasn't that. I was a team guy, but it was intimidating. It was intimidating to be around these folks. However, everyone was very welcoming and nice. And because everyone pulled in the same direction, because we had editors who knew how to do their jobs, producers who knew how to do their jobs, it was an autonomous department. We knew what the goal was every day and got that done. Kelly, but it's exciting because we'd be on an 11 o'clock show and that Celtics Sixers highlights not finished by the time you get on the set. You could be in your lead in, you know, hey, tonight the Sixers and Celtics, you know, great division battle. And I'm being handed the shot sheet with the highlights while I'm in the lead in. But the editors are so good that it's a wonderful little roadmap that you're reading to the highlights that gets you through that. So I say that because it's a collaboration, and that's what people have to understand. You're as good as the editor. You're as good as the producer. You're as good as your director that night. You know, we are all in this, but it was the best 12 years of my life professionally. It was like going to a sports bar every night without beer. Games were up by the time I couldn't wait to go to work. Games were up across baseball, basketball. Energy level was huge. We're throwing footballs in there, playing wiffle ball. It was great. It was great. And it was national and international. And I would run into people who saw us and say, I was stationed in Japan and you guys were who I used to watch South America, or at that time, ESPN wasn't on in Canada, but we did go toe to toe. I was proud because with about half of the budget, we went toe to toe with ESPN nightly.
Yeah, and right.
When I would go cover the NBA Finals or the Super Bowl, I'm in the NBA Finals and we're in, you know, Chicago at United Center, and post game, I'm in a small like referee locker room with my chair, and there's Dan Patrick sitting across from me. And one night he got Michael Jordan first, and one night I got him first. But you're doing your show in front of this guy, and I'm like, watch this, and he's like, watch this. So that competition brings out the best in everyone. And it was fun to compete at that level and be able to say we stood toe to toe with the big monster up in Bristol.
Right, and it's obviously been years since CNN has committed that level of personnel and finance to the sports side. And as we record this on Thursday, the 23rd of July, Vince, we're seeing with ESPN more layoffs with Carl Ravitch, who's been there, who was there for years, and a real quality announcers being let go. That is just what part of the way media is working today? And because this is not the first time that ESPN has had a number of layoffs.
Well, I mean, I think you have to generate revenue somewhere when you own the rights to all of the big events that they own. Then, you know, well, listen, Kelly, I think today we're numbers on a sheet of paper somewhere.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, look, I always say this about broadcasting. I don't want to see anyone lose their job because I've been there. I've been there where contracts aren't renewed and it sucks.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
But I will say this, if you're going into television and you think that this is going to be your end all and it's safe and secure for the next 25 years, you got another thing coming. It can be volatile. You are at the whim of a new general manager or executive, and somebody is going to have to cut money. And, you know, that decision is made for you. It doesn't necessarily have to be determined by your performance. And it isn't a lot of times. But I've been cut loose, too. And it's tough, but it's part of that business. And, you know, the fact that you have to have someone championing you in an executive capacity to keep you in there. But, you know, if I'm Carl Ravitch, and I don't know Carl, I've met him, but that's a pretty good damn run that you had.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. But you see a guy like Trey Wingo's gone, who I thought did a really good job there. So we can go on and on about folks. I just am not really crazy about the shift that they took, the turn that they took in terms of presentation of sports. I want less of the opinion and yelling at me in the morning and more of some substantive reporting.
You and me both.
You know, we've gone into the Pat McAfee world, and that's, you know,
no doubt about it.
Hitching their
wagon. And that's where they've hitched their wagon to him and to Stephen A. Smith. That's what it is.
That's what it is. And it's cheaper than running the reruns of SportsCenter in the morning to have guys, you know, be on and just talk for an hour or 2 hours. And, you know, this is what we've become. And this is what we've become as far as absorbing information. We want snippets. We want little tiny, don't give me long form. I can't read a newspaper. I just want little snippets of what's happening. Give me a take. Yes. So I think they went out there on and frankly, TV subjective. I don't like everyone I see on TV either, but they didn't like me. So, you know, people are going to lose jobs, but I'm sure it all comes down, you know, you always follow the money, and I'm sure that's what it came down to. But I learned, you know, Kelly, I'll tell you real quick. People on television, sometimes you can think, Scott Pelley, for example, with 60 Minutes, you can think that you're so important that, you know, you're the arbiter of what is going to be on television and not going to be on television. And this producer doesn't know. You're not that guy, man. You know, you guess what? When we let you go, and I learned this when Brett Musburger was taken off the national championship game for basketball. When you're let go, somebody's going to be in that chair tomorrow. Bet on it. They're not going to go dark tomorrow because you're not there. You know, you're replaceable. We're
all expendable, right?
Right. So if you think that, and I never did, I never got into television to say, you know, you're so lucky to have me on here telling you this story today. And I think a lot of egos do feel that way, but you TV will humble you very quickly.
Down to our final few questions with Vince Delaney.
I'm killing you, right? I'm rambling on and on.
Oh, this is exactly, look, Bob Bupka was the one who encouraged me for us to start this podcast. And he said early on, it needs to be storytelling based. I don't want to talk about, what do you think of LIV Golf? No. You can get that anywhere. I want to hear stories from guys. I want to hear opinions from guys. So you're right in the alley that our late dear friend Bob wanted us to be in. I have to ask you as we sort of, you know, move towards the eighth or ninth inning here. You talked about mentors early in your life, and now you've been an adjunct professor at Full Sail University for a number of years. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about what Full Sail University is and what you do in terms of helping the next generation of media, if you will.
Okay, so I spent almost 2 years there. I did step away this year because I had other duties that I'm doing with Golf Pass and hosting some clinics there. But I will say it was a wonderful experience to be able to give back. And Rishi Barron, who was the person that I worked with exclusively there, he's now the head of Scott Ramsey has Rent has stepped away. Rishi is now in charge. When I went down to be a part of Full Sail, I was there as a visitor in Orlando. Full Sail is teaching you is kind of accelerated programs for art, for audio, recording, TV, the Dan Patrick School of Sportscasting. Yeah. And when I went there, I was so impressed by some of the young people who had come up to me and said, "Can you look at my resume tape? What do you think of this?" They're in a, you know, a studio and they're learning television as its basics. The thing I felt and my connection there was, this is me at 21 and 22.
Yes.
Anxious to be in this business, excited about it.
Yes.
Wanting to follow a dream. So when I had the opportunity to remotely teach, I took it and worked with young people and tried to shape them to tell them about the aspects of television they should be working with and how they should write, presentation, learning to do a good lead in, learning to put a button on a good story and move on, how to anchor a show, how to do a live report. It was very rewarding, especially when those people go on and they actually get television jobs. So it was a chance to give back and to help guide people in this industry who are really excited to be a part of it and now have opportunities to be a part of it because of the workspace has grown so much that you can get into streaming areas, you can get into production, you can get into all of these areas. So Gus Ramsey, what did I say? Scott, Gus Ramsey. I'm losing it, Kelly. I can't remember names, but Gus Ramsey was there and he was the head of it and former ESPN producer, by the way.
Right.
So the reason I went there was because they did it the right way. They were teaching the way I learned. Learn how to write. Learn how to use video to augment your writing. Learn how to be on television and present yourself. Learn how to do a stand-up in the field to do live reporting. So I was drawn to that. And I thought if I could at least give some advice, because I started just doing some lectures periodically, I said if I can give some advice and guide people in that regard, then and give them real life experience, then I think it would be very rewarding and it would be something that I could help contribute as they move forward in this journey. Full Sail, if you're interested in broadcasting, it is accelerated and you get real experience there as a student or remotely to be able to work in a studio. If I had that coming out of school where I could sit in front of a camera and have a resume tape, you can have a resume reel that you can now go and shop to people out there.
Yeah.
And
huge benefit.
Huge. And it was great because you get people who were all different ages and backgrounds. And, you know, somebody's a mom and she just wants to give it a shot. Or this guy said, I always want to be a sportscaster. I'm an accountant, but I want to try this. So it is very rewarding. And I would have people, I would encourage them to look into Full Sail if they had someone in their family or a friend's son or daughter or niece or nephew who was interested in broadcasting.
Good for you. I'm glad you're doing that. Let's close with the question that I close with on Music Zone Golf Interviews, Vince. And that is, if you could play a kind of a magical round of golf, if you had three individuals, whether they're still with us or they're deceased, and you could go out and play 18 holes with them, who would those three be and why? And then where would you go play?
Wow. That's a great question. I think Mr. Nicklaus would be one. Ben Hogan would be another. I'm a huge Hogan fan.
Interesting.
And it would be my father-in-law, the late Italo Verano, who introduced me to the sport and who loved the sport so much and was so good at it.
Yeah.
I would love to have them together because I would love to listen to stories. I would do a lot of listening.
Yes.
And maybe ask a question here or there. But I hold all of them in such reverence. I think Hogan's the father of modern golf. I think he is a guy who self-made, no-nonsense person.
Getting out of the dirt.
It's in the dirt. And, you know, tough from that era. Although my dad's going to be mad because he's kind of left out of this foursome.
Make it a five.
He'd love to get out there too. He had a kind of a self-made, kind of a self-taught type swing. And I guess if I could play, I think just I'm a guy that gravitates to Pebble. I just think Pebble Beach is is magnificent. And I think there's something about being there that doesn't make you feel like you're just playing golf. You know,
do you play a lot of golf yourself? What kind of player are you?
I've just started kind of getting back to it. I had a knee injury and a shoulder injury, but I have a good friend here who's been kind of working with me as well. Not a great player. I've lost distance and probably certainly lost swing speed. But you know, I came to golf late in my life, probably in my 20s, because we just didn't have access in growing up where I grew up. We didn't even talk about the neighborhood, but we really didn't have access to golf. I was a city kid and, you know, we had maybe one patch of grass in the whole neighborhood. So, and Kelly, at that point, you know, golf wasn't cool. Tiger cool. Like it
yes.
is
now. Right.
Some of the best athletes didn't go into golf. Now we're seeing these real athletes go into golf. They're choosing golf.
Yeah.
So it was just a little bit different then. But I wish I had taken it up earlier. I still enjoy going out. I'm a guy, I'll drop a couple balls and hit and just be in friendship with my buddies and play. I miss my son, who's a really good player, who moved away, former college baseball player. He was the guy that would take me out a lot. He kills me now. So he's the player in our family.
Yeah, and I do think, you know, having the years I worked at the PGA of America and stressing all the great aspects of golf, and whether it's that camaraderie with your son playing or with your buddies, or whether it's competitive, whether you want to beat somebody or just being out for a Sunday afternoon stroll at 3 o'clock and playing 9 holes, or going out with your wife and playing a few holes and having dinner. It's what makes the game, Vince Cellini, so great, because it offers so many ways to experience and enjoy it.
It's the hardest game. It's the most
that it is. Game.
It's so, so hard. And, you know, to be able to be good for 4 days or 3 days in PGA Tour champions in a row and win is extremely difficult, but it's a game and it's sports. But golf in particular took me in places I never thought I would be.
Right.
Hawaii to Scotland to just really wonderful places and venues around the country. I never thought I would be there. And it has afforded me the opportunity to do that. Some street kid from the east side of Cleveland is, you know, now sitting next to Arnold Palmer, which is pretty amazing, I think. And you know what? I see your hat and... We're fortunate that we have opportunities to do that in this country. Anyone who tells me that you're limited in the scope of your dreams is just not seeing clearly. You know,
correct.
I live that. You know, I live that opportunity. So, you know, I hope people realize that whether it's through golf, whether it's through television, whatever your business is, that you know you have a chance to succeed. But Kelly, it's been a lot of fun talking with you.
Well, I think you can probably sense that I'm a big fan of Vince Cellini. Great guy, very versatile, professional, as you heard, and there are all the different sports that he's covered. He's had just a great career, and you can continue to check out Vince and maybe help your own game along the way as he hosts the PGA Tour Champions Learning Center on Golf Champ. And a reminder, again, that they're down to 70 starting Thursday in Memphis. Enjoy the FedEx Cup playoffs this weekend on both Golf Channel and CBS Sports. For Janice South, I am Kelly Elbin signing off and thanking you once again for joining us on Musings on Golf.